Well, g'day everyone. It's the Rugby Pass podcast. Today is the 1st of July and we are coming to you from Fiji today. And what a pleasure to welcome to the podcast this week the one and only Geoff Wilson, former All Black great and now host and commentator extraordinaire with Sky Sport New Zealand. Goldie, first of all, I guess for the podcast today, we want to recap the June series. What are the big takeouts for you across the Southern Hemisphere?
Yeah, really interesting, wasn't it? The fact that, you know, we saw the results the All Blacks have. They continue to re-establish themselves. That's what they wanted to do. They went about re-establishing themselves as a team that, you know, isn't just about what's past. And they weren't based around seven or eight guys that have left. They created a new culture within their group. The environment worked, got new leadership. They debuted some new players. So bottom line, I think they achieved everything they probably wanted to achieve out of it. South Africa got shaken up by Ireland. That was a real surprise. You know, everyone thought South Africa would play well and comprehensively win that series. Well, they were very lucky to get out of it and had to work hard to win that 2-1. And I think it's a great stepping stone for South Africa, actually. I think Alistair Coetzee, to get a challenge first up, to get himself in a position where he understands exactly what he's dealing with coming into the Rugby Championship, bonus for him, across the Tasman in Australia. What can you say? England were outstanding. They really, really were. Eddie Jones played it well on and off the field. Michael Checker's looking at his group now and going, you know what, I'm thankful we've got some guys coming from across the way, coming from Europe back, particularly in their back line, to help out going into the Rugby Championship because they certainly need it. So I think they're under a serious amount of pressure, as is Michael Checker.
Yeah, I'll take you back to the Alistair Coetzee point. This is a real transitional stage for South African rugby. And I would put to you that that's actually a good result for Alistair. Oh, it's a 2-1 yep. series victory. And he's blooding a lot of new players. There's a lot of political pressure on him. And there's also a lot of personal pressure on Alistair Coetzee. I don't know about you, but I don't think we are aware enough of just how tough that job is this time for Alistair Coetzee.
Yeah, there are rules in place, isn't there? There are things that he has to abide by when he's selecting his team. And he has to consider every time he puts together a squad about, you know, and the number of black players he was going to have in his squad and how he's going to get them on the field. So that is going to be an absolute challenge. But I look at what he actually did through those three test matches and you go, they showed some real resilience. They showed the ability under pressure to get a result. And at times it wasn't pretty. But let's be honest, when they're not pretty, generally they're winning. You know, that's the reality for them. They exposed some new players to that level. And I say, he's had to balance up the fact that he's had so many experienced players leave as well. Mm. The All Blacks talk about what they've lost. You talk about what South Africa's lost. Yeah. De Villiers, Matt Field, the Du Plessis brothers. You know, you look at that and you go, wow, they are in probably more of a transition than the All Blacks are going through, and a brand new head coach. Yeah. So, you know, but I still think they're very, very dangerous. I think they're one of the other countries around the world that has the depth across their game, the fact that they can at least... bring in guys like for like and find a way to challenge the other Southern Hemisphere teams.
Joe, there was something else about that series too. The Lions for so long, and we'll talk about them in our Super Rugby section in today's podcast, but they were the saviours for yeah. South Africa. And who would have picked that a couple of seasons ago that it would be the core of the Lions team that was coming to save the day for South African rugby and playing in a very exciting, open, expressive Lions way?
Well, a well-travelled Alvin Yankees is an important part of that. You know, and that test match, I think the second test where he went off for a concussion test, this was, and he got booed off, yeah. You know, because they were losing. And they brought on Mornay Steyn. He got the big hero's welcome. That's right. And then he came back from the concussion test and got booed back onto the field.
Yeah.
And then he came out and had a blinder. Yeah. Kicked the goals, brought them back to an important win to get them back 1-1 in the series. But he's been around a little bit. I think he's been an important part of that Lions team, which, you know, the likes of Ruan Komprek, Warren Whiteley, there's some guys over the last two seasons have just been going about their business, playing good footy, and they're reaping the rewards of it now. I'm not sure the other teams are as strong as they have been, let's be honest, but bottom line, I think in Alistair Coetzee, he's got another team he can look at, a team that's leading for them in Super Rugby, and go, you know what, maybe we need to look deeper into why they're being successful.
You're on the Rugby Pass podcast. Today's the 1st of July. We're joined today by Geoff Wilson as we discuss the June series. Let's move across the Tasman and let's talk briefly, Geoff, about English rugby and specifically about the only name that counted through the series, which was Eddie Jones. There are a lot of people who suggest, and either through experience or through dislike, that Eddie Jones is a great honeymoon coach, a great starter, but not a great finisher. Do you buy into that, or do you think he's the genuine article here? He can lead England's development through to the next World Cup.
Well, what you have to look at is what he's now coaching, who he's actually dealing with, and what he's got available from. And you're talking about a well-resourced rugby football union who are prepared to invest in their side. And he does have a level of talent there. He does have players who can compete at the international level, whereas, you know, you talk about in Japan, you're always looking at a spike. You're always looking at that one result against South Africa, but hard to get consistency. Well, now he's got he's talking about one of the superpowers. If you're talking about the top teams in the world, top organisations in terms of investment, he's got the opportunity to build a bit of a dynasty. And you've got to remember, 2019 is actually not that far away. You know, he's only got to build towards that. Anything that happens after that with him is an absolute bonus. So he'll get guys certainly involved with the Lions. A big chunk of those players will be involved with the Lions, and he won't have to worry about that, I doubt, unless something unusual happens, he becomes available all of a sudden. So,
if they beg him.
Yeah, if they beg him, which, wow, it'll be interesting to see what they do. But you get the sense that they are, if you aren't interested, they want him to focus well and truly on England getting back to the top of the world where they were in 2003. So I saw some positive things. I mean, reality is, though, their numbers 1 through 5 were better than the Wallabies up front. And when the Wallabies type 5 don't perform, they're always going to be average. And they didn't perform against England, and England just absolutely beat them into submission. I think it was complemented by the rest of the side, but Farrell kicked his goals. Mm. You know, Mike Brown's a very, very good player at the back. You know, I think James Haskell in that first test was outstanding, set the tone. You know, Courtney Law's one hell of a player. They've got some seriously good players, England. Now they've just got an architect who understands how to motivate them.
Rugby Pass podcast today, 1st of July, coming to you from Suva, Fiji, as we prepare for an historic Super Rugby clash. Jeff Wilson, Super Rugby back on the menu. Feels like a long time ago since the last game, although the June series went really quickly, and here we are, the Chiefs taking on the Crusaders, a Chiefs home game at ANZ Stadium, Suva. Although, judging by the locals here, loyalties are pretty split. There's a lot of Crusaders fans, a lot of Chiefs fans, obviously. And what a game to bring to Fiji for the first time. This is a conference decider.
Conference decider, and the fact it's in a country where there is just the passion for this game, and you know, I think we're talking 20,000, aren't we? There were 20,000 at the stadium. It's going to be sold out. There's been a lot of people travel for it, but in terms of the context of the game, and you could probably, if you did look at the start of the season and look at it, you go with 3 rounds to go, Chiefs playing the Crusaders, 2 of the favoured teams in the competition. You could actually see this is quite possibly going to be a pivotal match. And this is fascinating for a lot of reasons, because you've got environments coming together. They're about a month off. All Black players have been out of these systems. They know their systems, but they're coming back in. Yeah. They've got to integrate straight away off the back of a hard month of rugby, and they have got to hit this game bang on from minute one. You can't afford to slip up. And so for both of these sides, I think it's how well each team handles the preparation, how they mentally get themselves in the right state. The challenge of being in Fiji is it's just lovely. It's beautiful. It's warm. You immediately feel as though you're on holiday.
That's right.
These guys aren't on holiday.
No, they're not.
This is the business end of their season. The fact this is the difference, quite possibly, between having a run at a home finals run. And that, we know, is so important in this competition. So a team that prepares well mentally gets around the fact that we're not on holiday. We're in the business of getting ourselves number one in the New Zealand Conference.
So what about the conferences then? Because I think we're at a point in the competition where we can look at who's going to be there in the finals. The New Zealand Conference, we knew, was going to be very competitive internally. There are a lot of teams there still with a chance, and even the Blues still with a mathematical chance of making the playoffs. They've got a big game this week against the Hurricanes, of course. What's going to happen for you? How is this going to wash out in the New Zealand Conference? Are we going to have 4 teams, 3 teams in the playoffs?
I think we'll find a way with 4 teams. I think it lends itself towards that. You'd expect the Highlanders, even though they're without their two, without Smith and Fekitoa in South Africa,
they're
playing the Kings. You know, but if you're the Kings, how do you look at this game? You're going without their three of their very best players. Okay, this creates a great opportunity for us. But I expect them to win. They go and play the Jaguares in South America, and then they come home to play the Chiefs. So I think for the Highlanders, all they're focusing is
these two games,
make the playoffs. And so how's it going to play out? The big one for me is the Hurricanes and the Blues. All 5 teams in the New Zealand Conference have got a shot. Blues, it's a fascinating situation, because if they beat the Hurricanes, last 2 games are at home, against the Brumbies and Waratahs, and people will go, well, they're the top two Australian teams. Australian rugby's not in a great state at the moment after what's just happened. A lot of those players will be, I would say, demoralised of what's happened, the internationals. So they give themselves an opportunity. How I think it will wash out, I think we'll get four in. You know, I think the Blues will struggle to make it if things go to form. And how's it going to come out at the top of the table? Look, it's going to hinge on this game tonight. Mm. And I don't, honestly, I sit there and I can give reasons for both teams to win, for the Chiefs and Crusaders. I think they'll comfortably make it through. I think the Hurricanes and Highlanders will be fighting for that pretty much that eighth spot.
Do you know, this is a massive week for Australian rugby. And a massive 3 weeks for Australian rugby. If you look at their conference, and the conference winner is going to go through at the moment, that's the Brumbies.
Yep.
But all the Australian teams, I think, have got New Zealand opponents some stage in the next three weeks. That could be an absolute death blow for Australian rugby, because if you're not winning that conference, you're struggling.
Yep. Oh, and they might to only have one team. I think they will only get one team through, just with the nature of the way that the games are going to fall. It is devastating, because what they need is they need to get some confidence from somewhere. They need to get, you know, their players out there playing against the New Zealand sides and performing, so that when they make that next level, that step up, you get the sense. It's like they've lost their direction.
Yeah.
And we had 3 months off, the New Zealand teams, players, and they came back on fire. They had the same amount of time off, but unfortunately, a lot of their players went offshore. And then they come back and they didn't hit the ground running.
But you know, Goldie, you also look at it, we've got head coaches being sacked.
Yeah.
Two in Australia this season, one pretty much at the start of the season. We've got another under pressure in Melbourne, Tony McGann, who's lost his assistant coach, Leo Crowley, who walked off the job.
Yeah.
You know, basically because he was being bullied at the club. There are fundamental issues with Australian rugby that we will delve into in the next podcast, for sure. But let's head across the Indian Ocean to South Africa and say, where are we going to wash up here? Because the Lions, to me, are front runners. Not only front runners in the conference, front runners to host all the way through to the big dance.
Yep, and they deserve to be. They came away on tour to New Zealand and played very, very well, did exactly what they needed to do, had a couple of impressive wins when they're on tour. When you get that done, all of a sudden you start looking down the track and you go, we're good enough at home, we play well at home. I think the South African conference is a bit weak. I think we can accept that. Very, very inconsistent. The Cheetahs and Kings really haven't put up much of a fight.
The Sunwolves or Jaguares.
So. Yeah, exactly. So the reality is that they've had an advantage to get there, but it's not without, I go by how they played against us, and New Zealand sides, and I think they've played well. So they've done that. I think they beat the Highlanders at home, didn't they? No.
Beat the Blues, certainly.
They beat the Blues. It was the Blues at home, And you know, they come and they beat the Chiefs in Hamilton. So reality says that they're going to be very, very difficult. They won't get advantage all the way through, I would doubt, but enough for teams to have to travel there, as always. But that's always been the nature of this competition.
Sure.
You have to go over there, and the big race over there is really who's going to pick up that fourth spot. Is it the Sharks or the Bulls? Don't know. That's the unknown. Stormers look as though they're just doing what the Stormers always do.
It's the Great Wall of Cape Town.
Yeah, right,
always
exactly.
has been. You're on the Rugby Pass podcast. Our special guest today, Jeff Wilson. Jeff, at finish today, I want to talk to you about historic occasions or grand memories of Fijian players or playing against Fijian players. We are sitting on the harbour in Suva. It's a beautiful day in Fiji, but there is something innate in the Fijian people when it comes to rugby, a talent, a spirit, a sense of adventure and expression, which is just a joy to behold. But you would have had, I'm sure, your favourite memories of against or with Fijian players.
Oh, and I've always been fortunate enough to have some sort of Fijian influence in teams that I've played for, whether it be for the Highlanders, Otago, whether it be playing against them. Look, I remember my first game against Canterbury, and it was Paula Barley, I was up against, and such a... had that beautiful, silky outside swerve, just unbelievable speed, and he was a big man as well, like the Joelle Vendieris of the world. Had to play against Joelle, very fortunate to play the likes of, with Tui Levu, played against Vunim Baka, Tani Vula, for and against the Otago in Auckland. He came and played for us at the Highlanders and then beat us up when he was playing for Auckland, and, they play with a freedom with the game. They play with a, you can tell, an absolute love of the game and an absolute pleasure. And I'm just trying to think. We have one player.
We shouldn't name this player because this is an embarrassing story. So
he came to Otago and we brought him in, and he was talented. He was fast, but he was young, and he was playing in this game, our first game at Carisbrook at home, and we were doing our normal preparations, doing what we do, and we get into our huddle just before we're about to go out. To go onto the ground. At that point, that's when Byron Callagher starts crying and everyone gets emotional and forwards are firing up and backs are screwing up their face going, what's going on? What's getting me so angry about? And literally, we're 30 seconds for getting the manager to give it the out. It's time. And all of a sudden, we hear this, boys, bola, bola, let's take a photo. Photo. He's got this big grin on his face and he wants us to break out and give it the, and he goes, bola. And we were just like, are you serious?
He's got a camera.
And he's got a camera in the changing shed.
This is before the camera phones. He's got a full noise camera.
Full noise camera in the sheds in Dunedin under the old stadium there at Carisbrook. He wants a team photo 30 seconds before we go out. And to be honest with you, I think we won the game comfortably. And it was beautiful. And in subsequent, 30 seconds before we go out, the boys, Boys, how about a photo? You know, just little things like that. And for me, it was that how proud they are to be there, how much they love the game. And you see, when I was playing with all of them, when they come to training, when they come to the game, they couldn't be in a happier place.
Yeah.
You know, and
it doesn't matter if they get flattened by their mates. They get up laughing every single time.
Yep. And regardless of the performance, they come out the next week and they're just happy to be there again. And with that, great play. And I always say this about them though. Of all the players I've ever played with, they're the only ones that only ever run as fast as they have to. literally, it says, I'll keep a meter in front of you. That's a meter in front of you. And then if they're chasing someone, all right, I'll run you down. Then they're lightning quick. But it seems to be the way, we're nice and laid back, but when it's time to, when they have to run fast, they've always got another gear. Just a pleasure to play with and be around.
Pleasure to have you on the podcast today too. Thank you, Jeff Wilson. That's the Rugby Pass podcast for today. The 1st of July, we are back into Super Rugby. You can catch the remainder of the season all live. Go to rugbypass.com.